Time to kick off the second hour, Robbie and Rex Road. ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. I am not Robbie. He is Rex Road. I'm Elijah Campbell. Michelle Knezovic behind the glass, driving you through these first 4 hours of game programming. Talked a ton yesterday about Tennessee baseball falling a tad short of Omaha, losing to Notre Dame in three games in the Super Regional. What's next for the Vols? Well, we're about to find out as Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel joins us now. Mike, appreciate you joining us this morning. How are we doing?
Doing great, and yeah, glad to join you guys, even though I do miss Robbie's presence.
Yeah, Robbie, taking a little bit of a break. I'm relieving Nashville's ears from Robbie Stanley for just a little bit of time, but he will be back next week. Scholar and gentleman, Robbie Stanley. But Mike, I'm sure Robbie would get a kick out of this question because this athletic department at the University of Tennessee is no stranger to gut-punching losses. Like, it has been a thing in the last 22 years of this century that they've had some just brutal blows. One of my earliest sports memories growing up in East Tennessee is the 2001 SEC Championship loss to LSU, which cost Tennessee a chance to go to the national championship game with a team that I thought was better than the 98 team. There's been so many losses in the Butch Jones era, beating Florida, Georgia, and then not being able to make a SEC championship game. Obviously, the postseason basketball losses that have haunted Greg Oden blocking Ramar Smith's shot at the rim in 06 still haunts me. But out of all of these losses that Tennessee has had in the last 20 years or so in these big-time moments, where do you think this one resonates with Knoxville residents and Vols fans?
Yeah, I think it's high. I don't know the top of that, just because football is king. So when you're talking about football losses that pertain to potential football national titles, and those are going to carry more weight. But certainly in the past 5 to 10, you're talking about probably maybe the biggest, just because this is a team, was a team, that you're talking about Tennessee versus the field going into the tournament. And that tells you how heavy of a favorite, obviously, they were to go and win a national title. And anytime you're that heavy of an anointed favorite, and then you don't even make it to the College World Series and have a shot to play for that title, and that status that was floated out of, could this be one of the greatest college baseball teams of all time? Pretty significant gut punch, I'd say.
Yeah, and I would agree with you, Mike. You know, football is, it's just like with everything. You know, football, you put it over to the side, it's just different from everything else. Certainly the basketball loss this year, because I think a lot of us, you and I included, thought that team absolutely was good enough to make it to New Orleans in the Final Four. But 3 years ago, of course, Grant Williams' last team, Jordan Bone, I mean, those guys were number one for a pretty good chunk of that year. And for them to, you know, lose in the Sweet 16, I think of that one too. I think it's to me, it maybe more Tennessee fans are invested like in that team than this team. But I don't know. I can't say that for certain either. I just felt like there was just so much, they had just gotten so much of the Tennessee fan base wrapped up in them, and so I think it's an interesting question. Those come to mind for me. My question for you, Mike, is, immediately after this loss, you know, in fact, Tony Vitello goes to this in his press conference. It's his opening statement. He immediately goes to the controversy, the accusations, the perception of this team from the outside world. Do you believe that any of that stuff led to the failure on the field?
I don't believe in the notion that it was karma, which I think was something that I saw floated on Twitter from various places. I don't think that in any capacity is what happened to Tennessee. I think there's certainly a pressure in being number one and such a heavy favorite, and there's probably more pressure to it when you've added pressure on yourself. By being so willing to be the villains and Tennessee versus everyone kind of attitude, I think that inherently comes with a little bit of extra pressure, and it's obviously self-induced at that point. But I didn't see that play a factor this weekend. I saw Tennessee get outplayed by a team full of seniors who had been on this exact stage last year and were more emotionally equipped for it than Tennessee was. And, yeah, Tennessee got outplayed. And I don't know who said it to me after the game, but on Sunday, but someone made the point and said that was probably the kind of team that was going to give Tennessee the hardest time because it was experienced. It was a team that had gone through it last year in Starkville and just was built emotionally ready, I think, for that stage. So no, I don't think all the stuff that surrounded Tennessee factored into this weekend or added more pressure, but certainly they didn't help themselves in terms of the overall pressure you're going to experience.
Well, let me follow up with this question, and I guess my stance on this is clear. I still have Vanderbilt fans like telling me I'm like lining my pockets with this opinion because this couldn't possibly be. But I don't believe that Tennessee should do anything differently. I mean, I think that naturally when Jordan Beck and Drew Gilbert leave, you're probably not going to have the same personality as a team next year. So I think I would assume there'd be some level of maybe easing off some of that, although Vitello leads the charge, right, with the way he approaches things. But do you think that they need to look at adjusting the way they go about anything?
You know, the one thing I would say is Jordan Beck's Georgia Tech moment probably crossed a line or two.
yes.
other than that, no. That's an identity, and that's what Tony Vitello has done, is he lets players come in and be themselves. And I think that's what's drawn a lot of players to this program, and I think that's what's going to continue to draw a lot of players into Tennessee to play for Tony Vitello. And, yeah, the one downside is if you give the freedom, there might be a moment like a Jordan Beck waving a finger toward an outfielder because you're okay, you've let people be themselves at that level. But no, I mean, the bat flips, the shenanigans, the daddy hat, the pimp coat, like, or fur coat, whatever you want to call it, like, those things, it's not traditional baseball, and I think that's why it ruffles people to some extent. There's baseball, more than any sport, has, you know, its purists of this is what it's supposed to look like, put your bat down, put your head down and run, and all those different things, but that's not the brand of baseball that Tennessee plays, and they're good with that, and I certainly think it's created a love affair with the fan base because the fan base wants to see that exact thing.
Talking to Mike Wilson from the Knox News Sentinel. Mike, I feel like the regional round before the Super Regionals might have had a little bit of eerie foreshadowing in there. They got behind on Campbell early in that game. As much as I am a fan of the Fighting Camels, it's still, I feel like, underachieving just a little bit. And then, obviously, what led up to Jordan Beck's bird flying hit was that they were trailing late in the game in the ninth to Georgia Tech, a team that most people would say that doesn't match up well with Tennessee at all because they're not a great pitching team in the slightest bit. Was there a little bit of lead up kind of to this super regional disappointment in terms of, I guess, the pitching maybe kind of falling back to earth a little bit? Or was it just one of those things, you're just not playing your best ball maybe at the right time on the calendar?
I think there's a lot of factors there. Certainly, you saw Tennessee bleed a little bit in the regional, in maybe a way that you hadn't, because the starting pitching wasn't great then. I do think, probably to me, starting in early April, I thought there was, and I asked Tony Vitello that week about the innings for Beam and Burns. I did start wondering after the Vanderbilt series, how long is this sustainable for, you know, those guys to go 6 to 8 innings every week in their first full season, when you're talking about going this deep into it. You wonder those things, but at the end of the day, baseball is just not a game that typically is dominated to the level that Tennessee dominated it. It's very rare. And Tennessee the past 3 years has basically done that, and obviously this was to the greatest level yet, but it doesn't go like that. Baseball is not a dominated sport. It's a sport where what happened this weekend happens, where Goliath loses. There's equalizers in various ways, and you can look at Georgia Tech in that way too. Georgia Tech, not a great pitching team, but Zach Maxwell top 200 MLB draft prospect, has a game of his life because he's got filthy stuff and had the best control he's had. I mean, those are the things that happen in baseball. You see a random occurrence like that, and Tennessee came out on the wrong side of one of those this weekend.
So, Beam, Burns, Dolander. I mean, if there's a – I could be wrong, but I would suspect that has a great chance to be the best weekend rotation in college baseball, or the SEC college baseball, right up there next year. Lots of losses, though. Mike Tidwell, you know, should be a prominent pick. We mentioned Gilbert and Beck. A lot of other guys, Lipscomb, Lipsius, all these guys. How good do you think next year's Tennessee team – and I know they have a ton of talent coming in. They got some young guys. How good do you think they'll be?
I mean, I think when you're talking about Dolander, Burns, and Beam, you might have been talking about the best weekend rotation this year.
Right.
Is certainly at points early in the year. So I certainly think that's, when you're looking ahead, you're talking about preseason, the best rotation in college baseball, just because, yeah, it was that at many times during this season. Offensively, there's huge questions. It's a lineup that's going to look a lot different. I mean, there's so many staples that are gone. And I mean, you're talking about Evan Russell and Luke Lipsius and that, too, who've been around since the start of the Tony Vitello era and have been consistently in that lineup for so long. So you're going to see a whole different squad, but I think Tennessee fans are also probably juiced to see full-time Blake Burke, who hit, I don't know, 14-ish homers in maybe 114 at-bats. So there's pieces coming back. You know, Christian Moore is back. Maui Ahuna, the shortstop from Kansas, is coming in. I think what Tony Vitello and Josh Elander have proven in recruiting is they're going to have dudes and have dudes ready to go and develop dudes. Because you look at this year's team, no one expected Trey Lipscomb to hit 22 homers coming into here. Jarrell Ortega hadn't done it at a consistent level. Evan Russell's a brand-new catcher. I mean, there were question marks on this year's team going in. I mean, they were picked fourth in the SEC East, which proved to be very foolish. But there were question marks. And in the end, Tennessee had dudes ready. So I think that's probably what you're going to see again is a whole lot of that.
Yeah, scary weekend rotation as well. And we saw what that did to Vanderbilt when they had Rocker and Leiter and how far that took them as well. So I have a feeling the Vols will be back next year as well as this year. Maybe not to that level, but I think they'll be back. Mike, appreciate you joining us and happy to have you on.
Yeah, thanks you guys. Make sure Joe is the one who's gone next time.
We'll try. We'll try our best to get less Joe, maybe a little more Robbie next time. So
yeah, you know, perfect. You miss me. You miss me already. Come on.
I cried myself to sleep last night.
It's one weekend with Joe, and that's enough. That was enough for Mike. Mike Wilson, Knoxville News Sentinel, always a blast to have him on. We'll react to a lot of stuff that he said on the other side, including the future outlook for this fall baseball team. Can we see them in the same position next year, and can they actually redeem themselves? We'll discuss on the other side and a whole lot more as you listen to Robbie and Rex at ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game Nashville app. You hear us on the radio airwaves, but you can also watch us, especially me, in my B.J. Upton shirt, a vintage B.J. Upton shirt. You can watch it streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook live every day. And our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Robbie and Rex Road here, ESPN 125, 106.3 The Game. Mike Wilson talking about all the returns the Tennessee baseball team has, and all the losses. A lot of bats being lost from this year from this, honestly, one of the best hitting teams we've seen in college baseball, but they will return a murderer's row of pitchers and a weekend staff that's going to be almost unmatched in the sport. So my question here is, and you can chime in on our text line or phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, is can Tennessee be back next year and at least get themselves in that same opportunity to play within a game of the College World Series? And how confident do Vols fans feel about this team going in next year after the disappointment in the college baseball tournament this season?
Yeah, and the thing is, when you talk about next year, I mean, I have very little feel for Arkansas next year, you know, Auburn next year. I mean, The SEC is ridiculous, and of course that is reflected in, let's see, Auburn won yesterday. Yeah,
they did. So they punched their ticket.
They go out to Oregon State and get it done. They also I got totally hosed on that, by the way, with my called shot, because Oregon State's ace gets like a stomach bug and doesn't start the game that they absolutely would have won if he would have started. But hey, I'm not bitter about that at all. But Auburn wins. Salty. Yes, I'm mad at someone else's stomach bug because it messed up my pick in weekend winners. But you've got four current SEC. I want to make sure I'm correct on this. You've got four current SEC teams, and you've got two who will soon be SEC teams that are alive in the College World Series. I want to make sure I'm accurate about that. Yeah. You got Oklahoma, Texas A&M. There's two who will be.
Texas, yeah. SEC and Texas A&M who is in. Yeah.
Right. So you have Texas A&M taking on Oklahoma. You got, so it would have been Tennessee, Texas. Should have been just by the quality of Tennessee's team. Again, all credit to Notre Dame. But you got Arkansas, Stanford. Stanford comes back and beats UConn after UConn takes the opener there. And you got the all-SEC Ole Miss, Auburn. So you would have had three of the four, matchups involving SEC or soon-to-be SEC teams, and then and then Arkansas in the other one. Arkansas, it's insane. So that's the thing is when we talk about like next year, it's just, I just assume there's just going to, I mean, look, I assume Mississippi State, defending national champion who had a huge rebuilding season, is going to come back strong. I always assume LSU is going to come back strong. Florida, I mean, there's just so many programs that invest and are good and have talent. And in some year, now there's more consistency with a Vanderbilt. That's a crazy thing. We're talking about all this is just an SEC party, and not just Tennessee, but Tennessee and Vanderbilt not being part of it. Big disappointment in this state, also really like surprising, but when you look at next year, you start with that rotation. It's hard to not think Tennessee is going to be awfully tough just based on those guys back. Dolander is a junior, and then some people think he could be the number one overall pick. But he's, I think, certainly going to be a prominent pick in 23. And then you have Beam and Burns as sophomores, and those guys both absolutely, I think Burns a little bit with his velocity and everything, maybe a little bit more prominent, but I think you have a real good chance that all three of those guys are first-round picks eventually. So that's your rotation. I mean, that's awfully strong. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I think Tennessee, there's a chance they could be picked to be the favorite. But then again, Vanderbilt also with Holton and Fittrell, I mean, they also, and then a lot of other good arms, they've got a ton of pitching. Both of those teams have just questions offensively that some people, some names that we aren't familiar with are going to have to answer. I mean, both teams are going to need guys to emerge. I mean, Spencer Jones emerged this year for Vanderbilt and still – they had a disappointing year. I mean, he's going to be a first-round pick. He was tremendous. And still, they didn't have enough. So both of those teams needing to find offense, both of them should have really good pitching. But, yeah, that rotation for Tennessee, without having a great feel for these other teams, expecting them to be excellent, I think it'll be it should give them a decent – I did not know until Mike Wilson said that they were picked fourth in the East. That's pretty funny.
It's hilarious to think of now, considering just how untrue that ended up being and how it was Tennessee versus the field, even in the SEC, which you just laid out, has all these teams in the College World Series and all these teams that are two of which are going to be in the SEC in the future.
Exactly. And, look, Arkansas consistently really good. Maybe they're just like they're that team next year. I mean, it could be that probably no one will be that team, because what Tennessee did this year, as Mike said, like you just don't see it. Again, the number one seed not winning it, it's what you come to expect. The number one seed being that dominant, it doesn't usually happen. Usually the number one seed isn't discussed in this team versus the field, or everybody picking that team. I know not everybody did, but you know, probably 95%+ of people who were making picks on this tournament picked Tennessee to win the tournament. So, yeah, it's just it's going to be more of a. I think you're probably going to see more parity next year. And look, I mean, you take out Russell and Lipsius; those are the two top, or they're right there with Helton among the all time home run hitters in program
Lipsius
history.
Eclipsed him in the Super Regional series.
So Lipsius ends up one ahead, right? Lipsius, yeah. So they both
technically
pass Helton.
He passed him in game two, I believe. So then I think the one in game three made him two up on Helton.
Made him two up. Okay, yeah. So your top two home run hitters. I mean, Drew Gilbert is is one of the great hitters they've had. Beck, same thing, you know. So take, and then by the way, Trey Lipscomb just about won SEC Player of the Year. And as Mike said, he had an incredible year relative to expectations. So as well as Vitello is recruiting, can you just expect to just plug in and there you go? Well, I don't know. We'll see.
That's a theory I have, is that he's going to kill it in the transfer portal. I think they can really get guys that are prepared to play right now, because as much as people want to dog on the style of play in terms of the bat flipping, the trash talking, like, college baseball players, a lot of them love to do that kind of stuff. Like, Ron, an athlete loves to be able to play for a coach that lets them be them. And there's really not a coach in college baseball quite like Tony Vitello in that regard. I think that's got to be an appealing recruiting tool in terms of poaching some really good talent from other schools, right? Like, I feel like other players see that and like, man, they're having a lot of fun. They're really good. And kicking tail while doing it has to be a fun college baseball experience, especially if you're not thrilled with where you are right there and you're a guy that can go there and play right away and automatically replenish some of those bats that they're going to be losing after this season.
Well, I think you're right. Now, I don't know, like, how many guys in the portal are absolutely upgrades, you know, over young guys that you've already been recruiting. I don't know that. I mean, in football, there's always plenty of talent out there, and most teams can find people who would be upgrades. You know, most teams at the higher levels can do that. In baseball, I think it's a useful tool, and Tennessee just scored big in there. So I could see another player or two for sure who could possibly make a difference. And then, of course, with that, you look at Vanderbilt, and I know that's one thing that Vanderbilt fans – have been saying a lot or asking a lot is, you know, will Tim Corbin, you know, embrace the portal? But there are definitely, you know, differences there for sure. I mean, look, the schools are just different. I mean, Vanderbilt, all that stuff, it is a lot more complicated for them than it is for, I mean, frankly, anybody else in the SEC. Now, people have talked about the advantage of, like, Opportunity Vanderbilt and more money, for, need-based aid and things like that. You also, you have academic restrictions and transfer restrictions, things like that, that are not, like, snap your fingers and you're fine, basically every other SEC school. Also, I think Corbin is old school. Corbin has built a pretty good program here, doing it his way. So it's an interesting question. I mean, I do think that he should be open to it if you find the exact right fit. I don't think as a college coach you can completely dismiss the portal. But I guess I'd be surprised if Vanderbilt starts going heavy to it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the feeling around here locally as well. We'll continue the conversation on the other side. And, of course, at 7:45, the Rex Rant. Don't want to miss that. Stay tuned. Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 1025, 1063 The Game Nashville app.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 1025 The Game and The Game Nashville app.
This song cracks me up every time I hear it. I think this goes back to the boy band rant.
Am I losing my mind? This is not the Rex rant.
No, I'm losing my mind.
That's what I was thinking too. Like, I think I read the, like, I might have just read the grid backwards, but you never know.
But still now I have it. Now I have a Rex rant. Thank you.
He's like, I didn't have one before. He has one now.
That's okay. You'll get to hear that two times. As soon as before we went to break, Elijah said the Rex rant's coming up, and in my head, yeah.
Oh no.
So sorry, guys. True. You get to hear One Direction twice today, Joe.
That will really get the blood boiling. Yeah, that is true. It was a little bit of a real premature tease there from Elijah.
I did say, you know, at 7:45. So
yes, fair, yes. But you were champing at the bit.
So, I was. You know, I
it's
was
understandable.
Maybe it is a different A. Maybe it's a longer A. Chomping. It is a European origin. So we might be right after all. Us common folk, us non-Michigan State and Kentucky educated folk might have gotten it right after all. You never know. Maybe we'll hear about that in the Rex Rant in the next segment.
The Ivy League of East Lansing.
The Ivy League. Yes, for it's a little too much for my MTSU educated brain to comprehend. Better on the basketball floor, not in the classroom. But
there you go.
I'll always have 2015.
Well, that reminds me. So my ninth grader, how old would he have been when that game happened? You know, huge Michigan State fan. So yeah, but I mean, why can't I do the math? Okay. 14, go back 6 years. So he's eight. So he's eight. Yep. No, it's 2016. It was 2016. Yeah. So he's 8 years old. So the next year, I actually take him to a Belmont MTSU game, him and his older brother, and he was like screaming for Belmont because he's still so bitter at MTSU, you know. But last week he did the Middle Tennessee football camp, Stockstill's camp, and he said like they got to go into like the basketball facilities. Like every single picture, these huge posters on the wall are of that win over Michigan State.
Oh, Reggie Upshaw hanging on the rim to seal that game is there's a massive decal as you go up the tunnel onto the floor. It's still there with the score plastered right next to it as well.
As well it should be. I love like a little man, a little PTSD there, but yeah, man.
It's funny because you have like a hallway, it's like of all their accomplishments, you have like a CBI championship one like on one wall, and it's like NCAA tournament appearance, and then this big, like an entire wall of just Reggie Upshaw hanging on the rim with Matt Costello looking dejected below the rim as MTSU sealed that game. So they will never forget. That was a program defining win. I'll never forget because I just used it on air. So we'll never forget that one. Have some text to our text.
That was an all-timer.
That is an all-timer, which I thought would be the biggest until UMBC ruined that 2 years later. But some text to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Dennis texts in, says, I don't understand what Wilson, talking about Mike Wilson earlier in the hour, meant by Notre Dame had an advantage with seniors and being more emotionally ready for the series. Was UT also not full of guys with tons of experience in high-profile, high-pressure games? Most of those guys played in the College World Series last year.
Yeah, well, I think his point was just like that's the kind of team that would have a chance against them, right? Another veteran team,
right?
You know, not that. Oh, clearly that team has the edge, and I mean Notre Dame had no edge. Notre Dame on paper had no advantage. The only thing they had going in was, well, they do have two aces. They have one ace, but they got two really good starters. So that happens sometimes. It's a two out of three, and if both of your frontline starters are just lights out, you could that equalizes things against a much better team. But that's the crazy thing, is that didn't happen. Their ace is the guy that Tennessee got to without Drew Gilbert, and so you figured after just a really mess of a Friday with Gilbert getting ejected, all that stuff, it's like, okay, Notre Dame put its ace out to win this thing. He got rocked eventually. It took some time. It took getting to into like the third time around through the order, but he got rocked. So you're good. And then, you know, it's baseball. I mean, really the best explanation, although I think Wilson had a good point there, but the best explanation is it is baseball. I mean, you can go into the Major League Baseball postseason, and how many times has the clear favorite been upset? Lots of times. You know,
and teams that aren't great in the regular season turning around and winning the World Series. Cough, cough. The Atlanta Braves last season. Cough, cough.
Sure.
The Washington Nationals in 2019.
There you go. No,
that
I mean,
Nationals team beat that Dodgers team. That they finished like what 25 games behind them in the regular season.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, so take it to college kids and tell me it's not going to be pretty wacky stuff, you know. So, which when I look at Omaha, I mean, Stanford is the highest seed remaining. You know, they're mm-hmm. probably the best all around team. But tell me Notre Dame gets to the final series right now. I'm not going to be shocked. I mean, you know, that's stuff like that happens all the time. When Vanderbilt won it in 2019, Michigan was on the other side, having beaten the clear number one seed that year, UCLA. So, it's what happens.
Sports and engineered for randomness.
It is. Well, so
Caleb on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, says Burke, Moore, and Dickey will be the main replacements for those bats leaving, and I'm almost willing to say those guys will have just as good, if not better, stats, all as sophomores.
I think that's a little bit optimistic, Caleb. I think, you know, Burke has massive power. He's got to work on, you know, if I'm throwing to Burke, I'm not letting him see a fastball. And, you know, I mean, he's you know, of course, he's young, so you expect that stuff. He's got work to do. I think he could be tremendous. You know, Moore, we'll see. You know, we'll see with Moore. I mean, I do like him. And Dickey, I agree. Dickey is a very talented guy. Obviously, had the foot thing this year, things like that. I mean, look, I don't look at Tennessee and say, man, who the heck are they? Do they have like college players going to be able to fill this lineup? I mean, it's not like that. Mm-hmm. It's not some dire situation. But you still have to see guys like that take steps to know, you know, you have to see it to believe it to some extent that they're going to be as good as these guys. I mean, again, you're talking about the best pitching in the nation by like 0.7 ERA, which is absurd.
Steep. That is a steep gap.
And then you're talking about, or 0.65 or whatever it was. And then you're talking about the best offense in college baseball also, the most power by far. Some of that has to do with the park, but you know, half their games weren't there. And a lot of the homers they hit there, you know, threatened the bank of the river. I mean, so you just can't snap your fingers and here's the new guys that are just going to be just as good. We'll see. But it's a great starting point, you know, with that pitching staff, no doubt.
Yeah. And obviously that's a great start. And I honestly, when it comes to faith in like Tony Vitello and this coaching staff to be able to replenish bats, I have like the utmost confidence, especially when it comes to not just maybe replenishing them, but developing them too. Like the leaps a lot of those guys took throughout their career, Lipschitz and Russell, like, come to mind as well, just getting better each year. Like they have a track record at this program right now of excellent player development. You got to take that into account as well. Austin on the text line asks, how many bats you think they're going to lose, that we project that they're going to lose? And the biggest ones, I guess you could probably say, that we reeled off earlier, you know, Beck, Gilbert, Lipschitz, Russell, Lipscomb. I don't know if I'm missing any more, Joe, but correct me if I am. But I would say the biggest, they're losing.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, I expect Lawson to be back. You know, then on the pitching front, there's some interesting. I mean, I think Ben Joyce probably goes.
I don't know what the draft stock looks like for him, but I mean, with an arm like that, it's hard for like scouts to not love that, right? Like, that's modern day baseball, is throwing that kind of heat.
Well, and the thing is with him, he's not a finished product. So, I mean, that's his spot in that Tennessee bullpen was, he was not like the absolute setup guy. He wasn't the closer, you know, like he was behind a few other guys who have better command in that bullpen. So you could make the case, come back next year, be the guy, right? And then, but at the same time, when you're throwing 105,
scouts, you know, drool over that. They almost don't care about your control at that point. It's such a good starting spot.
I think there's a team that's going to be like, yeah, you work on that stuff with us. We'll pay you and come work on that with us. So I'm just making the assumption that he would go too.
Yeah, I have a feeling that even if there's some command issues, that Major League Baseball teams are just going to drool over the fact that he can throw 105, and they're like, we'll figure out the rest in the minors when it's the ideal place for development. But
so real quick, yeah. Dennis follows up, says Notre Dame. He said that Notre Dame was more emotionally equipped for it than Tennessee. Well, you know, again, look, this is where maybe I think that Tennessee, if you want to talk about emotional comparisons, that was like Notre Dame's hope, right? Is that the pressure? Is that emotion? I don't know, but I don't think there's any doubt that the pressure of everybody saying you're going to win it all, maybe some of the pressure of everybody hates you, but I think it's a lot more.
I think they're related.
They could be, but I think it's a lot more like you're the clear favorite. Just go win the whole thing. I think that's where intangibly Notre Dame had a huge edge. Now, does that mean they're more emotionally equipped? I don't know. I guess maybe that's not the exact right way to say it, but that's how I took it.
Coming up next, the Rex Rant. We will hear One Direction again. On the other side, Justin Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and The Game Nashville app.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app.
As Michelle just said in my ear before we got back on air, this is take two for the Rex Rant. Time for Joe to have the case of the Mondays on a Tuesday. In honor of this being our second attempt at the Rex Rant today, caller number two to 615-737-1025 will win a four-pack of tickets to Monster Jam at Nissan Stadium on Saturday, June 25th. Caller number two to Michelle in honor of our second take of the Rex Rant. We'll get to see Monster Jam, an exciting event here in just two Saturdays. So, Joe, without further ado, let's get angry.
You should have applied for that PA job, man, with the Titans. After that, that was strong.
I've kind of always wanted to just mess around and do that for fun, and just like totally botch it. just be a caricature of what PA announcing actually is.
Speaking of totally botching it, Michelle. No, not you. Me. I botched it because I admitted yesterday that I like when you play on Cop B, and now you've gone back to the terrible new boy band stuff. But hey, it's a good move on your part. I mean, it's much more of a Rex Rant intro. So
listen, you got it twice too, because I totally messed up. So
I get it.
That's
twice.
That's the best
too,
part. So. That's the best part.
So today I'm going to revisit yesterday's Rex Rant, because it won't stop. There are now 190 comments on my column off the Tennessee game. This may be a record. I'm not sure.
For this?
Actually, what's that?
I said this is the one that gets the comment or the record for comments?
Well, I mean, look, people are absolutely triggered. And it's really interesting to me. It's really been an exhausting couple of days. I guess you could say I did it to myself here. But the exhausting part is people, like, not fully reading, like, you know, not totally understanding or reading. Again, if people don't totally understand, you have to look at yourself and say, did I write that clearly? So I'm always looking at that. Like, did I not write something clearly enough? You know, did I not make it clear what I'm trying to say? But a lot of this boils down to, and I'm trying to find the, I just lost it. I had it and I just lost it. There's just so many comments that to me perfectly illustrate like why people are so misguided on this. But what I get, basically this is Vanderbilt fans. And again, let's review a lot of the points here. Okay. You should be talking trash to Tennessee. You should have a parade at their expense. I mean, this team talked a lot of trash and got people angry and lost, and you should enjoy it. But I think what Mike Wilson hit on again is just my big issue. The idea that this is like karma, or to me, take the karma out of it. The idea that what they did caused this and should be adjusted. I mean, I think that's really the bottom line. But what Vanderbilt fans are doing is taking this and making it about their program too, right? Right now, they can sit there and say, hey, see this natty and see this natty? We got two of these. What have you got? Do it. That's great. And until Tennessee actually gets there and proves it and wins the thing, you have that over them. But people, and I guess this is part of a rivalry, like you can't help but like compare the coaches, right? And so if you believe in your coach and you love your coach, then the other one must be bad. And certainly, Tony Vitello is a very easy guy to dislike if you're not a Tennessee fan. But a lot of these comments are bringing Corbin into it. Like, how could you possibly, you know, basically like compare him? Or of course, you know, Corbin's not like that. Corbin's better than this, this, and that. No one brought up Corbin, man. Tim Corbin is again, Tim Corbin's going to be one of the greatest coaches of all time. He's probably going to be the greatest Vanderbilt coach in any sport of all time. One of the greatest college baseball coaches of all time. And one of the greatest college coaches of all time. He's already established that. This has nothing to do with him, okay? And what he does is special and different. And I'm just repeating a lot of things from yesterday. But again, the Luke Smith story is a great example of, I think most coaches probably just leave it alone and their players say whatever after that game. I mean, he actually went out of his way to say, you know, we're going to back that kid up after he just let F-bombs go all over the field and go viral and blah, blah, blah. You know, he's different. There's no doubt. But this idea that, one, that like Tony Vitello's way is, you know, is like evil almost, you know, like, and like it can't work. This proves it can't work. They lost because of this. It's just, to me, like you're too obsessed with what they do, and you're not clearly seeing what they've become. They're a really good program, really good team. They're going to continue to be. And I think the biggest thing people are missing is there's authenticity here that you're trying to turn into fakeness. Like I said, I mean, I'm waiting for this huge financial windfall from writing this column. You can't possibly write this column unless like it's just like to get money from Tennessee fans. I'm going to set up a GoFundMe. Also, they're not faking this. Tony Vitello is that guy. That's his personality. I think Tony Vitello is like, you know what? I'm going to be a real jerk tonight. He's on the edge, a fiery guy. He barks at the umps. He barks sometimes at the opposing team. It's his personality. Drew Gilbert, that's his personality. I mean, look, I don't condone throwing a middle finger up, but that's what Jordan, that's who he is. So these guys weren't faking this stuff. I think that who they were was part of their success. Was it part of their failure? I struggle with that. I think their failure was that they were so good this year that they got psyched out. I mean, I think the pressure of the moment got to them. Whether they were absolute choir boys all year doing the same things on the field or not, they were going to have a tough time handling the pressure. Well, look, I shouldn't say they were going to. Some teams do, but they didn't handle it well. They didn't play well. And they're going to keep being the same basic program, but also Gilbert and Beck, those guys are different and they're gone. So basically I just need to say that, like, I think we're going to get past 200 comments today. I think I've said everything I need to say about this. I don't know if there's anything I've missed, let me know.
Well, it's a good day to break records.
I think every time I logged onto Twitter yesterday, I just saw Joe going back and forth with fans about this article. Every time I logged out, I'm like, oh, there's another paragraph from Joe. I didn't read them because there were just so many, Joe, but I mean, you were my Twitter timeline yesterday.
No, it's, and it, look, and that's the thing. Part of the rant is, why do I do this? Why?
You got to rant to yourself. Like, you can just, I mean, do the advice we gave AJ Brown, and that's to start muting folks left and right.
And the thing is, I do mute people if they get nasty, if they just say just ridiculous crap, right? Like just outland. I mean, look, I've muted way more Vol Twitterers than Vandy Twitterers because there's some Vol Twitter activity out there that's like way over the line that I have encountered that I just said, okay, you're out. I'm not talking to you. Most of these complaints were reasonable. You know, like it's just to me misguided. So it's like right on that line of, okay, I'm going to keep engaging with you, even though, again, some of them were like Jimmy 7896432. And basically, when you see that Twitter handle, you probably should just mute it.
Troll accounts.
It's like a face of a cartoon character. Who the heck knows who it is? There's like two followers, so it's like someone's burner. But I'm still not there. I'm still trying to figure this thing out, and this has been a heck of a couple of days.
So if you hear beeps, Joe's at his house right now. If you start hearing beeps, that is the Brinks truck backing up into his driveway from his Vols take, from pandering to Vol Nation. The payoff will finally come eventually. I have a feeling it might come during the show. You never know. So if you hear beeps, that's going to be exactly what it is. The
Brinks truck ready.
Backing right up into Joe's driveway, ready to drop off just buckets of cash. But we have a Nashville media mainstay, Nashville media legend from the Associated Press, Teresa Walker, coming up next to talk about the Titans and the mandatory stuff that is kicking off today. All that and more coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, The Game Nashville app.